Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. A caller says, I was very disappointed with the Enoch Burke discussion this morning as an avid listener. Michael, thank you for being an avid listener. Rebecca McDade showed sympathies towards Enoch Burke. Greg quizzed her and quizzed her. Now, just to be clear, I have a lot of respect for Rebecca. She's got lots of opinions on stuff. And what I was interested in is, I mean, I know there's point A and now we're at point B. I was interested in Rebecca's views on point A. I mean, obviously we can say, well, we don't know if there was a personality clash, but I have to understand, or I want to understand exactly what that means. That's what you do when you respect someone's opinion. There's an awful lot of people are very sympathetic to Enoch Burke. I think what a lot of people feel is that if he had used his intelligence and his platform in a different way, it could have been way more effective, because now we've discussed it today. He's in Mountjoy. He's probably going to be in Mountjoy over Christmas, and no one will be talking about it, right? So the reason it was put on the agenda is because it's a conversation quite a few people are having out there. But to continue Michael's point comment, the two panellists that had the view that Enoch should be locked up were never questioned. It was blatant that only one side of the argument was questioned. This was poor journalism, in my opinion. Both Richard and Thomas said that he's locked up because he breached a court order. There's no anti-argument against that, right? That is just the way, that's what happens. So there's no point, well, should he have been locked up? But I mean, everyone knows a court order is a court order, and if you continually breach it, that type of a court order, you'll end up in prison. So to say, there's no question there, say, well, should the judge have locked him up? Because the answer is obviously, well, if you continue to breach court order, you have to be locked up. It would be the same in my situation. But I understand where you're coming from. But, you know, there's not every radio station is discussing it and giving people a different a platform for different points of views in relation to that either. I actually just really wanted to know what Rebecca's point of view was, because I had asked a question and then it was another question back, if that makes sense. That female guest is shocking. Every organisation, sector, etc. has a complaints procedure. He didn't follow it at all. He continues to defy the law and is just hell-bent on turning a simple situation that he could have raised the correct way into a national debate because of his Christian fundamental beliefs. And the victim of his vitriol is left to deal with the aftermath as a younger teenager at school and in the community, disgraceful. With the approach, says another, that Thomas Pringle has taken about Enoch Burke, has taken, I'm not surprised he's out of a job, and I voted for him. There is so much false information around this case, and that's the issue. Each side spread their own view. Morning, Greg. That lady is wrong about Enoch Burke. The fella is jailed because he's ignoring a court order to stay away from his place of work. Let me guess, she doesn't like the fact that his Christian rights were questioned. You see, that is the fundamentals of it, and that's why I struggle every time I try and have this conversation, because, and I'm not speaking of Rebecca here, those that support Enoch Burke, fundamentally they support him, right? So they say, well, you know, like, I agree with his views, right? Let's just say that, but it's how we got to where we're at now is the problem. But if you, now, in this day and age, people take an opinion, and then, you know, the details within that sort of get lost because the opinion trumps that. Another, Rebecca is correct. I find it strange how no parent who was kids at that school had ever been interviewed by the mainstream media on the issue. If it's not in law, the principal has to share the blame in creating the dispute. Another, I think it's wrong that Enoch Burke was suspended and jailed over his rights, but that's not why he was suspended, and this is where we end up with the problem on this issue. Mr. Burke is standing up for his given rights, full stop. The only reason so many people are talking nonsense about Enoch is because of his stance being religious in many aspects. Agree 100% Rebecca, and I blame the original principal for the whole thing. At the end of the day, Enoch Burke, whatever people may think, say for that school going people upon... Okay, right, sorry. What effectively they're saying is because of him, people will be known as male or female, full stop. Housing. Most landlords, in inverted commas, own the houses they're renting outright with no mortgages, but they keep their investment house empty rather than rent for 6 years with no income. On the same issue, the issues with planning is a real problem in Ireland. No one should be allowed to object to the building of a home for a family on the person's own land, providing it meets council criteria. The problem is The council criteria is why the planning's not being allowed to build alongside the N56, for an example. So it would be the council's refusal of planning or the rules that don't allow planning that would be a bigger problem than those objecting, I would propose. If anyone has a different point of view, please let me know. Okay, we're going to be back with our next guest in just a couple of moments. Stay right where you are. Thank you so much for all your texts and comments coming in this morning, by the way. I will get to them as the morning wears on. But I want to say good morning now to Hala Ahmed. Good morning to you, Hala. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning to you. Thank you so much.
Right, you have been the victim of racist graffiti being daubed at your home in Derry. Talk to me about what appeared and when, Hala.
Just 2 days ago in the morning when my daughter was on her way to catch the school bus, and she saw what is written on a wall, and she called me and she was crying and terrifying, and I told her, we don't have to worry, just go on and catch the bus. And I went there and saw what is written. I really felt so angry and sad at the same time. It's really annoying, and it brought all sad and bad memories to my mind, because I came from Sudan, and of course, you know, there's a war there, and I don't know how to say this, but it wasn't good. It wasn't good at all.
Also, yeah, to the words read locals only, which I presume is hurtful in and of itself, but it's accompanied by what looks like a target of a gun.
I don't know. It gives me a feeling that we became a target, and I don't know who wrote it, because we have been living in the same area for almost a year, and we haven't been through anything like that before. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it just happened suddenly, and just when we start moving from one house to another, which is in the same area, it is only 1 minute walk from the old house to the new house. And we have been there for, as I told you, for almost a year, and nothing like that happened before. So I was really shocked and surprised why it just happened right now.
What are you going to do now? Yeah. Obviously, the PSNI are investigating. They're looking for witnesses in relation to this. However successful that is, we don't know. But how has this made you feel? How has it made the family feel? What are you going to do next?
It made my family feel, of course, very sad and upset, and made me all very scared, because we don't have we don't know what may gonna happen next. But the good thing is that I got a lot of support from the local people in my place where I live, and a lot of people, they called me and they supported me. Mm. I've been there for almost a year, as I told you. And I know a lot of people there. I'm a volunteer in the Northwest Migrant Forum, and I know a lot of people there, and they all supported me. And even those who didn't came and see me, they called me and they text me, messaged me. Yeah, and we called the police. Of course, the police came and investigate about it, and of course, we don't know who did this.
Okay.
But things will be okay.
Yeah. Okay, Hala, listen, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it. That's Hala Ahmed, part of a Sudanese family in the Fountain area, Fountain Street area of Derry. They found local only and a crosshair symbol sprayed on their home. The PSNI appealing to anyone with information or anyone who witnessed the incident or who may have captured dash cam or CCTV footage from the area to call them from the north on 101. And there's a number there to quote, which is too long for me to read out. Hi, Greg. I'm renting a house in Letterkenny for the last 3 years. My landlord told me last month he's selling the house, so I have to find a new house. The landlord has informed the council that he's willing to sell to the council, but they've refused to buy the house. I can't find any other house in Letterkenny that I can afford, as it's just myself and my three children living on my income only. So I presume the landlord's offering it to the council with under that resident in situ scheme. So they've got 6 months to find a new home. All houses are €1,600 in rent. I've contacted the council and they said to come back when I'm homeless and will be given vouchers for hotels for me and my three children. And that's something that's come up quite a bit in relation to this. People know they're going to be homeless on a certain date. And the council are saying to them, because I presume this is the just the way it is, that that until they are actually homeless, they can't do anything to help them. A horrible situation. 6 months is not a long time. Children probably in local schools as well. Maybe the job is local. And to be told that you've got no home in 6 months, it's horrendous. I have three houses that are rented out. I have three very good tenants, so I haven't raised the rent in 5 years. The government are bringing in an initiative that I will have to level up my rent to everyone else's prices. I will have to give my new tenants the house for the same price. They are also introducing a 6-year lock-in that you will be left with the same tenant for 6 years. So I'm left with two options. Raise the rent for tenants that have never given me bother or sell my houses. I rang the RTB and they say that people are ringing about this every day. A lot of landlords are thinking of selling up, and of course, and they are. There's been a peak in them. The rental market has increased consistently and significantly for years, says this listener. It's all down to greed and started with the influx of new citizens. Many smaller private landlords are selling their properties because of the incoming stricter regulations, nothing else. Another, I'm in my late 60s and we bought two rental properties as a pension fund. We're currently selling because it's our pension fund and we can't wait another 6 years to sell at the convenience of the tenant. We have had some great tenants and we've had some terrible tenants. We've been tempted to sell many times, but this call by the government was our final decision. But presumably, if you, I say presumably, I can imagine though, if you get someone in and then you decide to sell in 3 years, are you, that would be a reasonable excuse to ask people to sort of, in other words, to get around that 6 year. I must Google that because I'm sure I read somewhere that if someone was moving, say you had a family member that you wanted the house for or you were selling it, that the 6 years you wouldn't be locked into it. Greg, my feeling why families are smaller today is because number one, the young women today can't get a home because the price of a home, they're too expensive. They can't afford to build. When you take your wages and pay your bills with the price of everything today, you find there's nothing left to buy or build a home. Childcare today is so expensive, food, electricity, running a car, every day running a home. Women just can't afford a home. And if you haven't a home, then you can't have a family. On the birth rate, can you ask Rebecca what Aintu's views are on IVF and reproductive medicine to increase the birth rate? The two separate questions, I think, because, you know, there is not enough people seeking IVF treatment to that would address the fall in the numbers having children. So, but I do understand that you might be interested on Aintu's views on IVF, and we can find that out for you. I think the reason of small family, says the listener, is nothing to do with the cost of living. I'm thinking it's to do with both parents out working. Years ago, only one parent was working and one stayed at home. But to flip that on its head, the reason both parents are out working is because you can't live any longer on a single income average. A family can't live on an average single income now. So it's you say it's not because of the cost of living, but if you only have one parent working, the cost of living is such that you're not going to meet your bills, are you? I'm joined in studio by Leonard Watson, who's a parents advocate for special needs parents and their children, of course, as well. Leonard, thanks for calling up.
No
good
problem.
To have you with us. Right, I just want to reference first a letter that was received by Padraig McLaughlin in relation to CAMHS for children with autism, intellectual disabilities. It's a long letter. You're across it, right? So what I'm going to ask you to do is give us an idea of the nature of the question and then the response.
Well, Greg, this kind of goes back to CAMHS is Child and Adolescents Mental Health Services. They should be there for all children. So a typical thing, if you have a child who's suffering depression or that they're, they'd be referred to CAMHS by their doctor, that and this. But there's been an issue since January 24 with children with moderate to severe intellectual disabilities are being refused entrance to CAMHS. They say that they don't have the services there for them. But Greg, it goes back to your treating children. It's like a two-tier system for children. So the children that probably need it the most severe, are being refused. You see in that letter where they say that that they've been referring them on to, they have a name on it, so I don't have
the
letter in front
of me. Is it the National Clinical Operational? So I can confirm that three generic, this is the letter to Deputy McLaughlin. I can confirm that three generic child and adolescent mental health services teams in Donegal have never accepted young people with a moderate to severe intellectual disability into CAMHS. This is because CAMHS operate under the National Clinic Operational Guidelines, which state that children with moderate to severe intellectual disability are not within the remit of generic CAMHS services. This is a national policy and not specific to the area. Such children are instead referred to CAMHS Mental Health Intellectual Disability Services. And at present, there is no CAMHS MHID consultant or team in place locally. And we're going to talk to that in a moment because there is. So this is really, this is answering all of those individual frustrations that families were going through. There was never an option for their children,
Greg,
was there?
There was. Up until January 24, they were accepting children with moderate. I know they're saying there that they were. We know they were. They're accepting children.
Okay, so what they're saying here is that they never did, but you're saying that you have information that suggests up until January 24, they were, in fact. What changed in that month then, I wonder?
They went back to this policy, the Section 28 from then on. They probably are understaffed in Donegal, but that's not a reason to turn away children. I've told you some of these stories. Some of these stories are harrowing, Greg.
Remind us, because this is so important, Leonard, and it affects so many people. And, it's great that you have now a collection of people working together, but still many fight these cases on their own or have done for years.
Greg, I've been trying to get some of these families to go public in this, and they're too afraid. They're just afraid they're going to lose services.
What are the scenarios?
There's one lady, and this is typical of the stories. The child isn't sleeping. The child's anxiety is through the roof. So with anxiety brings behavioural issues, brings anger, brings violence. As one woman said to me, she's a prisoner in her own home.
Yeah, so she would then say, right, I need some support from CAMHS here.
But CAMHS will tell you that, they have this thing that this is just autistic traits. But autism isn't a mental health issue, but 70% of children and adults with autism will suffer depression, anxiety, and anxiety is huge, or ADHD, and they are all mental health conditions, But I've heard so many times, this is just autistic traits, and you actually see it in the letter to Porrick, we do not deal with behavioural issues, but anxiety brings the behaviour too, that's the thing, they're not even seeing these children, even there now you see they're about, there's different things for reasons why they've turned these children down. And one of them is requires a cognitive assessment to determine development levels before decision can be made. How do you do a cognitive report on a child whose anxiety is through the roof? It's impossible. I say about these families, these families, some of them have no support because the relations can't help them.
It seems to be that the children are being discriminated against because of the cause of their problems.
Yes.
If you know what I mean. So if another child doesn't have a diagnosis of additional needs, they can be seen.
There is children
even though
accepted.
There are delays.
There is children being accepted.
But one of my point is a diagnosis of autism, for an example, is you'd be better off avoiding that almost to access CAMHS. Now, you wouldn't, of course, be better off. But the children are disadvantaged because of that.
We are seeing traits where children with autism are being turned away by CAMHS. And that is definitely, that is the figures. At the moment there, I see there's 24 cases who have been referred to CAMHS and who've been turned down. Greg, you said where they were being referred on. They're not being referred on.
They're getting
a generic letter to say, we do not deal with children with to moderate to severe intellectual disabilities. And that's it. There's nothing at the bottom telling them where to go, What's going to happen next? There's nothing.
Yeah, here's a line. In relation to behavioural problems or challenging behaviour, which is an interesting terminology, CAMHS do not accept referrals solely for their management, regardless of the level of disability, unless there's a clear clinical reason to suspect that such behaviour is linked to an underlying psychiatric illness. So unless the child can be proven to have a mental illness, okay, yeah, they won't be treated for the exact same behavioural issues potentially, yeah, or not behavioural issues, not but same not. Issues yeah, like anxiety, etc. Yeah. If they have a diagnosis of autism, for an example.
Like
so that one is always going to cancel out the other.
Like, and Greg, and I'm saying, like, there's 24 cases at the moment. Well, I think it's about 24 cases. And despite these presenting with possible mental health issues or ADHD, they've been turned away. Like.
Mm.
They have never been seen. Like, nobody has actually, you know, sat in the room with these children. Like,
is this a national issue or a local issue? Because the HSC seems to say this is, look, this is a national problem. It's a national problem. It's not exclusive to Donegal.
Like, there is certain, yeah, there's a lot of areas in the country that this would be happening. But Craig, that's not the point. There's children suffering here. There's families suffering here. And, you know, this, it's a scandal. And like, even there, I'll go back to one of the families who were at their wits' end and just wasn't coping. And instead of helping his family, they sent two slits to the door to take away the child.
Mm.
To not take away the child, sorry, with the issues. Take away another child.
Mm.
You know, this is, it's an absolute scandal. Like, and that's why people are afraid. Like, you know, I was chatting to a parent yesterday and the same thing said here. Well, maybe we should get two slits involved. Like, you know, as if to say, you know, we'll take away your children. Like. You know, and you know, and
so rather than helping, families are being judged and penalised.
They're being threatened as such. You know.
So you say nothing because you don't want another child in the house to be taken from that house.
No, and they're taking away the neurotypical child. They're not taking away the child with the issue. They've offered to take away the child. You know, and it's just, as I say, Greg, like, you know, and it's heartbreaking when if you sit with these families and you chat, like, and this isn't going on for a couple of weeks. This is going on for 6 months, 8 months, a year and a half. People are just, they're not living. Like, I had a woman yesterday tell me that her marriage is on the verge of breaking up.
Well, it would be,
she said the pressure is
incredibly
just,
difficult to maintain any normality.
You know, and this is not parents sending their children to camps. This is clinicians. This is doctors.
So, a new mental health intellectual disability consultant is due to start work with CAMHS patients in Donegal in January. Now, how quickly they can work through whatever list is there. In relation to what the HSE is outlining now, so this means that the children who CAMHS can't take on, so they would then be referred to this person.
Yeah, but this is temporary, Greg. This is not a full-time position. Like. This happened a year or so ago. Like I say, I think there's about 24 cases. Is this doctor going to be able to take on the 24 cases, or is it just going to be maybe the top 10 or something? You know, and what about the cases coming in January and February that are new cases? Like, you know, this is like a stick and plaster. But I say, Greg, like, these are families that are not living. They're not functioning at school. These kids aren't functioning at school. Being asked to take them home.
Mm.
You know, not for functioning society. The family can't do anything as
they're
a family.
They're being punished rather than being...
But, you know, that's what I'm saying. We need to be helping families like this. Like.
So just to help me understand, so if a child then is referred to this person, the MHID... What is their pathway then to help or support? So if that person then says, look, could you help me understand that, right? So how might the mental health intellectual disability consultant help these families if it were to work?
Well, Greg, do you know what? My wife gave a perfect example here the last year. We were just chatting. Temple Grandin, probably the most famous autistic person in the world. And as she says, as a person, she would not have survived without medication, which is mild medication that she's taken. She would not survive in life. Now, some of these children do need medication. Like, and I'm not saying I'm not a doctor in that, but like, you know, again, Greg, me and you, if we suffer from anxiety, depression, that we probably will get medication. Like.
Yeah.
You know, but we've also known families who've gone through this system, who the children have been assessed, who have been given mild medication, and it's transformed their life. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying this about medicating every child. That's not about. But I'm just saying. This is why it's so important.
No, but
important.
Are bands. There's yeah. dosages and there's, yeah. you know, there are certain antidepressants that can take the edge off anxiety or worry.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
but,
like, so
you have
there
children
are.
That, whose anxiety is through the roof, like, yeah. they are not functioning. Like, even there now, perfect example, like one of the children I know, this child now is functioning at school. therapies are working, which therapies never worked before. And this is another big thing. Sometimes they'll tell you in camps, oh, you need therapies. You don't need us, you need therapies. But if you can't get a child down to a level where they're able to do the therapies, it's impossible.
So would, in theory, the mental health intellectual disability consultant be able to assess the children that currently are being refused by CALMS and potentially offer treatment solutions?
100%, yeah. Okay. But I'm just saying, how many of the families that are in dire straits now will get to see this personally?
Yeah, okay.
You know, and it's going to be an ongoing issue. This is going to be an ongoing issue. And you know, they've said in there that they're working on a plan. There's actually no plan, Greg, to have somebody full-time here. Like.
All right, stay where you are, will you? Because I do have to take a break and I want to talk a little bit more about this because there are people messaging in really desperate, desperate situations. So I want to make sure that we cover every element of this. By the way, we're talking in the context of a new mental health intellectual disability consultant being appointed to work with CALMS patients in Donegal in January. The problem here is that it's a temporary post. And we don't know of any plan really to address this, what will be an ongoing issue. So for hopefully loads of families, but the reality is for some families, this might help, but it's not enough to address where we're at and where we might what we might need into the future. Leonard, is that an assessment that you agree with?
That's a thing, Greg. Okay. I think there's about 24 families that need, I don't know if this consultant, if he's here for 3 or 4 months, can he see 24 families? Can he, you know? But again, that's only the families we know at the moment. There's going to be more. It's going to be an ongoing issue. Like, we need a full-time person.
Listen to this, family. I've been under so much pressure with our child that we've spoken about handing over our child to full-time care of the state. We've asked and begged for support, but there is just none. I have been contacted by parents so desperate that this is what they've done, or at least almost as respite involved Tuusla, because they have got no support and they simply cannot cope anymore.
Like, Greg, I say it's harrowing. Like, you know, you always like to miss 2 or 3 nights sleep. What do you feel like?
Oh,
yeah. Now you miss that for 6 months, 8 months, a year. Like, you're not functioning as a parent. You're not functioning for your other children. You're not functioning at work. You know, but I'm going to go back to the thing too, but turn away children with intellectual disabilities. Well, a child with an intellectual disability is on a ticking clock. You know, we're trying to get them to a stage where they'll have some kind of normal life. Like. But when they're not functioning in life, you can't, you know, the therapies won't work, the school won't work. So we're depriving them of maybe a life that they could have, like, too. And it's wrong, and it is discrimination. Like.
Yeah, I've been trying to get help for my child who is autistic because he has some very violent episodes and strikes out. On a number of occasions, he's badly attacked his grandparents and on a number of occasions, his siblings. What help was I given? I was reported to Tuusla over safety concerns about his siblings. You couldn't make it up. Yeah. So that's an example of what you were talking about. They're looking for help. They know that perhaps with some extra support or medical intervention, you know, their child might cope better and benefit better from any other interventions. But instead, the state is threatening or worried about the other child.
Yeah.
So you say nothing, do you?
No,
you say nothing.
Like one of them families, Greg, and you couldn't make it up. Tuusla came to take a child, but they're going to leave a baby in the house. You know, if they're so worried about the children, you know, you don't take away an older child and then leave a baby, like, you know.
Oh my God. All right, another one if you don't mind, Leonard, because I want people to understand exactly what we're talking about. My child is 13 and has a learning disability and mental health issues, self-harm, low mood, emotional distress, aggression, challenging behaviours, anxiety. If she presented at CALMS, there would be challenges because she was neurotypical. She was not seen within days. Because she has a learning disability, CALMS have refused to see her and have not assessed her clinical need. She's been downright refused based on cognitive ability. She was previously accepted by CALMS and discharged. It's been 6 months and they've refused to see her. The HSC has been absolutely no help. The Donegal Mental Health team have refused to answer phone calls or emails. I've asked for her to be outsourced to a mental health intellectual disability psychiatrist. Parents are not being liaised with. They're making it clear that my child is not as important or cared for as she has a learning disability. We spend all day trying to keep my child safe and occupied. A psychiatrist would help. We need a medication that only CALMS can administer. This really affects my daughter's quality of life. My child, regardless of ability, should be entitled to the same mental health service as any other child. If I turned up at the ED and my child had a broken leg, she'd be seen. She would not be refused because of a learning disability.
Yeah.
That's another...
That's like I say, Greg, if I went to counsel and your typical child who's suffering from depression, that child would be seen as an emergency and would be helped. I turn up with a child with an intellectual disability, you're putting the long finger. You're told to go away now.
Do we know how many vacancies there are for MHID consultants in this county? So do you see how one's being appointed on a temporary basis? Yeah. Are they saying to us that they do recognise a need, that you know there are one or two posts that aren't filled, that we have a plan to have a consultant or consultants in place into the long term? You know what? They obviously recognise there's a gap here because they're filling it, but are they giving us any information about what their long-term plan is?
Like Greg, you're saying they see there's a gap, there's funding. This is only because of political pressure. Like I've been chatting to all the TDs, you know, even pressure from us as parents' reps. This has only been filled because there's pressure coming on them at the moment. Like, but Greg, one full-time person in this job would make a huge difference to this county. Like, you know, you're not going to have hundreds of cases, but you're going to have a lot of cases, and probably one would be a help. You know, over a year, one consultant could do a lot of work.
What do we know about the temporary nature of this position, if we've been given any details?
We're not really, you know what, this happened over a year ago and I think the consultant came for about 3 or 4 months. But again, how many can that person see in 3 or 4 months? Like?
Right, so we need to get on to the relevant minister here. Yeah. We do, personally.
Yeah. Now, we were meant to have a meeting, actually, with the disability manager, and then she changed posts.
Yeah,
so.
Well, we need to put the pressure on here in relation to this, because this is unacceptable. All children should be treated equally. Our children should be treated equally. On a geographical basis, but all children within this area should be treated equally.
Yeah, and it's just not happening. It's just something has to be done because this is just going to be an ongoing thing. And you know what, Greg? I do fear what's going to happen in the future. Like, you do fear with what's going on in families. You know, you can't fathom what could happen.
Well, listen to that situation there of the grandparents and siblings. And, you know, you've a family that recognises this as an issue and they're screaming out for help. Oftentimes, I would say in the past, these kids would have just fell between the cracks or whatever it might. You've got a family there that all they want to do is help their child and they're begging the state to help them. They've identified the problems and they're at threat of Tuzla getting involved in their family as part of their fight. Why would anyone stick their head up if your family could be broken up?
Yeah, I've chatted
with no resolution.
Chatted a lady the last day who went to the doctor to beg for help and the doctor says there's nothing to do. She ended up leaving with antidepressants for herself. Like, you know, she's just not coping now. Like.
GPs can't prescribe for these children.
Not. Yeah, it has to be camped.
Okay. And
the GPs are referring these children. You know, therapists are referring them. The schools are writing letters to say the child's not functioning at school. Even on that day, like, the child's going into class and showing these traits. The teachers aren't able to cope. You know.
And a lot of this could be triggered by something like anxiety. And some of these medicines are incredibly effective at just lowering the anxiety, which makes everything else more.
We have seen evidence of that in children, Greg. Like, you know, I personally know cases where this has happened, like.
Yeah. Anything else you need to add in relation to this? Like, I want more parents. I mean, obviously, you know, the more information we have, I want to get a dossier of cases together to sort of bring to the attention of the minister and hopefully secure some sort of an interview where these questions can be asked directly to them. We've seen in some cases where a minister might go, well, I didn't know it was that bad, and action has been taken really quite quickly. I don't care whether that's true or not, as long as the result's the same, that we are treated the same and our kids are treated the same as everybody else.
Greg, they know. Well, you know, we've been at meetings with top officials in HSE and they know that.
If they want to plead ignorance and if it gets us to where we need to be, you know what? Well, I know where I'm coming from. Okay. Right, Leonard, thanks for helping me sort of get a greater understanding of that as the conversation went on, because you can't beat that. And I think our listeners are certainly going to be shocked to hear what's going on. Do you know those that aren't directly affected by this?
Yeah, but I would stress if families ring in and tell you their stories, like, because they are harrowing stories. Like.
You can email comments@highlandradio.com or give us a call on 07491 25000. I'm not necessarily looking for people to come come on air. We've talked about how, you know, it can be difficult to raise your concerns for fear of it working against you. So I recognise that. So any contact with us is completely confidential and we can work through it with you from there. As I say, I want to be able to put a very strong case towards any minister that I get access to in relation to this stuff. And I'd love to see maybe our local government politicians back in the families on this one if they haven't already.
Yeah.
Leonard Watson, thank you.
Not at all. Thanks,
I appreciate it. Thanks for calling
you.
Up.
Thank
Leonard
you.
Watson there, who's a very strong and vocal parents advocate for special needs parents.